of the Department of Justice team assigned to the case, city staff, and the Portland Police Association reached conceptual agreement on a number of amendments and on a new framework to achieve the community engagement objectives intended for the original COAB. And Nicole Grant will speak to the policy considerations underlying that framework in just a few moments. The draft settlement agreement amendments and framework plan for the Portland Commission on Community Engaged Policing, or PCEP, were provided to the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition on July 7th, 2017, and an all-day mediation session with the Ninth Circuit mediators attended by the city, the Department of Justice, the AMAC, and the Portland Police Association occurred on July 14th, 2017. At that mediation, AMAC provided all of the parties with thoughtful comments and concerns, and the parties agreed to several revisions resulting from those comments and concerns at that time. We then circulated a revised draft PCEP plan reflecting those revisions 3 days later, and the AMAC provided additional comments in a letter dated July 21, 2017, and we made further changes to both the draft amended settlement agreement and the draft PCEP plan in response to those comments. The proposed amendments that resulted from all of that process that I just outlined are set forth in Exhibit 4, and the PCEP amendments, or the community engagement amendments, are at Section 9. And one change to note is that because the new body, as the mayor mentioned, is intended to endure beyond the effective date of the settlement agreement, only the key components are set forth in the agreement itself. Most of the plan framework is attached to the agreement as an exhibit, and city council would be adopting that framework as binding on the city when it approves the amendments to the settlement agreement, should it do so. And during the lifetime of the settlement agreement, while the settlement agreement is in effect, any amendments to the community engagement plan for the PCEP would have to be approved by the Department of Justice. The city also, at the request of the AMAC, included in the settlement agreement amendments that during the term of the settlement agreement, the AMAC would be consulted about any amendments, as would the Portland Police Association. So the reason for putting it as an attachment in a plan was, again, that, you know, we're well on the road to and hopefully nearing a time when we will come into substantial compliance with the settlement agreement, and within a year after that occurs, the settlement agreement will no longer be in effect. And frankly, it was Department of Justice staff who suggested that it would make sense to have the PCEP framework be a standalone document once that occurs. So just very, very briefly, we've already discussed the companion ordinance regarding the alternative 10-10-10 policy. As I mentioned, paragraph 117 of the draft amended settlement agreement enables the city to use force audit data rather than EIS data to conduct certain analyses at the supervisor and team levels, which have proven problematic to conduct using EIS data. This is something that the DOJ thinks will work for there at the staff level, DOJ thinks.
So Tracy, we have a lot of people signed up for public testimony, and this is all important. But could we? This has been important and helpful. But could we? Let's just focus on the main points, and then I'm going to ask Nicole to focus on the main points and Constantine to focus on just so we can. The council has had the chance to go through these documents in detail, and
yes,
we can direct specific questions.
Great, yes, and I think the other amendments are of less interest to the public.
I agree, but I didn't want to necessarily make that presumption. Okay. Great. Nicole.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I will keep my remarks brief. My name is Nicole Grant, and I'm a Senior Policy Advisor for Mayor Wheeler, and I'm here to talk to you about PCEP, the proposed Portland Commission on Community Engaged Policing. I feel compelled, however, to first address one critical area of concern to all in this room: trust. There is a lot of mistrust in city government within Portland around community engagement, in part resulting from the COAB. Multiple parties share the burden of the COAB's failure, and much of this burden falls on the city of Portland. The city failed to create a structure sound enough to withstand a poor selection process, lack of training, lack of buy-in, and the public disruptions that plagued the COAB for a period of time. So, it's understandable that this new plan for community engagement, which is intended to reach beyond the settlement agreement, has stigma attached to it. For that reason, city staff, including myself, actively engaged the Portland community over the course of several months, ultimately asking, what should community engagement look like in Portland? Much of the PSEP plan was developed in consultation with the DOJ, PPB, AMAC, and the wider Portland community. We interviewed community leaders, religious leaders, mental health advocates, and former COAB members on the failures around the COAB and what could be done better. Moreover, the community was invited to complete a survey, and the responses to that survey informed the plan you have before you. That survey was distributed online on the COAB and ONI websites and distributed at community forums and advisory council meetings. The city actively engaged AMAC during this time and has done so for the last several months through a series of facilitated meetings and the AMAC's involvement in mediation with the city and DOJ. Additionally, as Tracy mentioned, in developing this plan, the city has incorporated a number of AMAC suggestions. The people of Portland need to know that this proposal was born out of thoughtful engagement with the community. We know what's at stake. If we do not move forward with the plan, we will be faced with continued and unyielding strife between the Bureau and the community it is bound to serve, creating a lose-lose situation for everyone in our city. PSEP was developed with the goal of increasing and strengthening the influence of the Portland community on systems of government and increasing the community's access to those systems. PSEP was developed with the intention of elevating those voices that have been consistently marginalized throughout Portland's history and that continue to be marginalized. One of the major lessons learned from COAB is the need for clarity around the Board of Commission's charge and responsibilities. The COAB was given very little direction, and so they themselves were forced to ascribe meaning to vague settlement agreement language, and this invariably became an area of contention. With the goal of achieving meaningful community engagement around key policy areas, PSEP's mission will be twofold. One, it will assess the Bureau's community engagement initiatives and recommend strategies focused on strengthening the Bureau's relationship with the community. Two, as it relates to this first piece, PSEP will function as a facilitator, soliciting and disseminating information between the Bureau and the community in order to improve transparency and accountability, top to bottom. This empowers PSEP to facilitate the community's feedback to the Bureau on key policy areas of concern, uses of force, officer discipline, interactions with those experiencing mental illness, and racial justice. The Bureau, in turn, will be required to provide timely written responses to PSEP, and by extension, the community. The Bureau must hear about what it is doing and not doing from constituencies who have not been fully engaged in city processes. Equally important is the community's need to learn about what the Bureau is doing and what it could be doing better. PSEP is a tangible step toward the larger ideal of what we all want our city to be, a city that encourages and upholds accountability through informed and critical civic engagement. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole.
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of council. My name is Constantine Sevier. I am the director of the city's independent police review. I have served as the director of IPR since June of 2013 and have been a staff member with IPR since October of 2008. So I'm here to request that council approve all the ordinances in front of it. I'm going to, in the interest of brevity, kind of skip through my prepared remarks and kind of get to the essential points. So IPR was created in 2001 basically as a complaint intake point. Over the years, IPR's role has grown significantly to us conducting our own investigations, acting as a monitor and officer-involved shootings. And a lot of the growth of IPR really started with the settlement agreement with the Department of Justice and the ability for IPR to be fully staffed. IPR back in 2012 had 2.5 investigators. Now we have 7 investigators. From 2001 when we were created until 2012, IPR did not do a single independent investigation. In 2016, we started 30 investigations. We were able to conduct an investigation of a former police chief, I had the resource to be able to send my investigator across the state to Harney County to be able to talk to a number of witnesses. And that is the result of the settlement agreement where the city and the Department of Justice, and in particular the hardworking individuals in the Civil Rights Division and folks in the U.S. Attorney's Office of Oregon, without them, the city would not have the accountability system that it has today. There needs to be more improvement, but I think it's really important, given the difficult times that we live in right now, that we recognize the hard work of the career civil servants in the Department of Justice. They work for us, not for a particular administration. So one of the main goals of the settlement agreement is, or one of the several goals of the settlement agreement, particularly Section 8, which is the accountability section, is that all administrative investigations are completed within 180 days, which is paragraph 121. Paragraph 122, administrative investigations are done concurrently with criminal investigations. Paragraph 123, that the city has to have a plan if it can't meet its targets. Paragraph 128 calls for the city to reduce redundancies, and importantly for IPR, that IPR have the ability to conduct meaningful independent investigations. In May of 2015, the Department of Justice met with city representatives and asked the city to develop a framework that the city would be able to consistently meet the 180-day investigation framework, that all complaints should be investigated with administrative findings attached. The city reduced the redundancies, and that IPR would articulate which cases it would decide to do its own independent investigations. As a result of that, IPR moved forward in investigating the following cases: cases of captains or higher, cases where there is a crowd control or a demonstration, complaints alleging disparate treatment, and complaints involving vulnerable populations such as the juveniles, elderly, and those experiencing mental illness. Agenda item 873 includes an addition to the city code that IPR and Internal Affairs provide recommended findings after conducting administrative investigations. That is a national best practice for investigations, period. That it would lead us to have better administrative investigations. It would save time. And I think, as important all of those other goals are, I think most importantly would be responsive to something that this community has been asking for since prior to IPR's existence. The other significant change in agenda item 873 is that it would change what we now call dismissals to administrative closure. And the reason why we want to change that is to be more reflective of the process that we undertake at IPR. And Nicole brought up a really good point about trust. And as the IPR director, I want to own that our process is supposed to be a process that can lead to healing and holding the officers accountable for their actions. But frankly, for a long period of IPR's history, we were not listening to the community. We hurt the community. And, you know, we want to listen to everyone, even people that we disagree with. And there was a period of time where somebody could call IPR and an investigator on the phone with them would say, well, you know, you got a traffic ticket and, you know, officers can give traffic tickets. That doesn't seem like misconduct to me, and hang up the phone. That is something that is unacceptable. And every complaint that IPR receives will receive at least a 2-week preliminary investigation for us to determine what's the best path for that. Whether that's going to be investigated by IPR, investigated by Internal Affairs, or if it's really something of a quality service. You know, this officer I called about a burglary and the officer didn't even get out of his car. You know, that probably should be dealt with at the sergeant level if it's not kind of a continuing behavior. So those two aspects of 873, I would urge you to approve, because one, it'd make our process better. And this is, I was trying to count the other day, this is, I believe, the fifth code change to IPR since 2010. It has been a significant road, and there have been times where the changes in themselves did not seem to be very big or very monumental, but I think the city can rightfully look at the administrative investigation process that we have now and say with a straight face to the community that we have a much more robust administrative investigation process than we did at the prior to the Department of Justice intervention. I would also ask you to support agenda item 872, particularly the revisions to paragraph 121, which exclude appeals to the Citizen Review Committee from the 180-day timeline and extends the days that the CRC has to complete appeals of misconduct complaints. The community members who serve as CRC volunteers are extremely hardworking, and the language in the agreement as it exists right now gives the CRC 21 days, and that required the CRC to meet twice a month for over a year to try to deal with that. And as a result, we ended up losing some very good community members who volunteered to serve their city that they care and love, but not at the expense of never seeing their family. So I think the amended language in the settlement agreement is much more reflective of having a shared goal of having a robust accountability system, but also having true community input of a diverse group of community members. I would also ask you to support agenda item 871. I won't go into a lot of depth about this, but you know, one of the things about IPR is that every officer-involved shooting, a IPR representative shows up at that shooting the night of the shooting within, I would hope, within an hour or so. And just luck of the draw, for 2017, I have been at every officer-involved shooting. And we have been able to create over the years, I believe, an administrative investigation process for officer-involved shootings that has gone from where it would take literally years for the city to be able to investigate an officer-involved shooting to, in the situation with Quanis Hayes and his death, the city was able to conduct, as the mayor pointed out, the interview of the involved officer within I believe, 26 hours. That was the fastest in my recollection of, and that's really what we should hope in the city. You know, I've met with the Hayes family, and I've seen the hurt of what occurred that day, and it's something that's affected me. And I think as a city, we owe it to the relatives of someone who was shot by the Portland Police Bureau to be able to say, we have done everything within our means to be able to look into what happened. And we also owe that obligation to Portland police officers. We send them out there to do a very difficult job. And the concerns that I have about the current deadly force investigation process is that we now have a process where we can be weeks, months, possibly years before the city, as the employer of the officer, being able to interview that employee about what occurred. That is something that violates the public trust, and I support the mayor's resolution in the hopes that we can get the Soriano issue clarified. I wrote a memo back in early June stating the position of the Independent Police Review. I believe state case law is clear. There is a case called State versus Bugley done by the Oregon Court of Appeals back in 1994. I'm not going to go into the weeds about that, but that was an administrative investigation case, and the Oregon Court of Appeals said quite clearly that Soriano did not apply in that particular context. There was no transactional immunity for, in that case, it was a state trooper. That said, the city's failure to look at all of these issues when it approved the collective bargaining agreement with the Portland Police Association, we have to own that. We made a promise to the community that the 48-hour rule is gone. We're sitting here 6-7 months later looking at alternatives. And I'm going back to what Nicole said about trust, because really, you know, I'm a police accountability professional. Basically, I'm in the trust business. When IPR was created, one of the stated goals in the ordinance, and something I go to a lot, is IPR was created to increase the public's faith and confidence in the delivery of police services. And unfortunately, I feel ever since that memo came out of the district attorney's office, there has been a significant tension between the community and the city and the Portland Police Bureau that didn't need to be there. I think all of us who work for different governments are adults, and we should have done our due diligence, and folks don't need invitations to participate in important community conversations about these types of issues. That said, I'm going to really keep it really short. The last thing about the officer-involved shootings is that there has been a significant detrimental effect in the timeliness of the ability for the city to do administrative investigations of officer-involved shootings. In the Quanice Hayes case, the city was able to go from the incident date to the case going to the police review board in under 5 months. In the situation in the case involving Mr. Terrell Johnson, that officer was not interviewed for 6 weeks. That is something that, frankly, as a City of Portland employee, that is something I am ashamed of, and I, with all of my soul and being, support the mayor's resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Sevier. And I want to acknowledge our independent auditor is here as well. Mary Hope Caballero has been listening patiently. We appreciate your presence.
I have a question.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Hey. So is there anything in the changes to the settlement agreement that removes the council oversight of the settlement agreement and shifts that to the mayor's office only?
No. The only change is the only area that is specific to the mayor's office is the PSEP. But otherwise, council remains responsible as the elected leaders of the city for the city's compliance with the settlement agreement.
Okay.
Sorry.
I was just going to say that Commissioner Udaly and I have some amendments that would further make that clear.
We have three more invited guests. I'd like to call up Dr.
I have questions.
Oh, I'm sorry,
them.
Commissioner Udaly. I apologize.
Okay. I'm going to decide where to start. I am curious if there will be any difference in how we proceed. With the ability to compel testimony in less than 48 hours. I mean, what happens after an officer is involved in a shooting, and how would this meaningfully change the way we proceed?
What happens under the policy that just went into effect, and how would the policy that you'd be adopting change it? Am I understanding your question correctly, Commissioner?
I guess I don't want you to have to outline three different, you know, the past policy, the current policy, and the
right.
new. So let's compare current to how this would change
okay.
and what that means moving forward into an investigation.
So right now, under the policy that just went into effect at the Bureau, an officer will not be compelled until either the district attorney says, yes, it's okay to compel the officer, it won't negatively impact my criminal investigation, or until the criminal investigation is complete. That does not mean that the Bureau doesn't start the administrative investigation. They do start the administrative investigation immediately. IAD is interviewing everybody else. They're just not getting the compelled statement from the officer.
I'm sorry. I don't want you to have to rehash all that. I'm asking, what is the difference as far as, you know, does the officer go on administrative leave either way? I want to know what the difference is.
The only difference is compelling the officer's statement within no more than 48 hours.
So it makes no difference to what happens after that?
Correct.
Okay. And, I mean, just to be clear, because I'm not sure that there's widespread public understanding, if a citizen commits a murder, they cannot be compelled, right?
Correct.
Okay. And so compelling is a higher standard, I guess, or a different standard that we apply to certain public employees?
We are the government, and so by compelling, we are exercising governmental authority, even if it's our employee. If we are taking that statement that was compelled from the officer under threat of termination or discipline, and we're giving, this is clear under federal law, mm-hmm. and we give that statement to the detectives division that's investigating on behalf of the district attorney, and then that is used either to investigate or as actual testimony, you know, actual evidence in the trial, that violates that officer's Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination that anybody has. A normal citizen who's not employed by the city, we couldn't compel them to do any statement, nor could the district attorney. The issue arises because, as the employer, we have a right to compel the employee or to discipline or terminate the employee for refusing to answer our questions as the employer, because there's the government also wearing the hat of prosecuting. That's where the difference comes in. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. And the rest of my questions, I'm not sure who's the best person to direct them to, so I'm just going to state them, and whoever wants to answer can answer. So I received dozens of emails from people that don't support these amendments, and I've kind of culled some of the most common concerns or the most compelling concerns to me. One question is, are we somehow eliminating tracking, analysis, and review of racial profiling data through any of these amendments?
So the creation of PSEP directly involves the Office of Equity within the Portland Police Bureau. Specifically, it references PPB's racial equity plan, which addresses tracking stops data, and also how we're going to implement policies around that. The reason why this was included, it replaces the CPRC's 2009 racial profiling report. The CPRC disbanded, I don't know how many years ago, but it's no longer kind of in operation, and the racial profiling report is outdated at this point. No additional work was being done on that. And so in reviewing the settlement agreement and in also wanting to kind of connect this work to equity, we thought the most appropriate kind of avenue would be to engage PPB's Office of Equity and involve the racial equity plan, because it's like a five-year plan, and it addresses community engagement, it addresses racial profiling, specifically stops data, et cetera. And that's available on OEHR's website.
So we're not eliminating tracking.
We're not.
We're adding it back.
Right.
Okay.
And that's in the framework for PSEP and not referenced specifically in the settlement agreement. Much of what was formerly in the settlement agreement regarding Section 9 has been placed in the PSEP framework.
The obligation to track the data remains in the settlement agreement.
Good. Okay. Another concern that is going to be addressed by one or more of the amendments that will be proposed later is that the entire PCCEP, is that PSEP?
PSEP.
Task force or commission will be appointed by the mayor. Why not include any language around ensuring that the makeup of this commission would either or both reflect our actual community, as well as place emphasis on the groups that are most impacted, which are probably going to be people with mental health issues, people of color, perhaps people with disabilities? Why no language around that? I feel like it would...
I believe there is language around that in the settlement agreement, if I'm not mistaken, and also in the document, in the framework itself. But we are certainly open to kind of specifying groups. That I have no opposition to that.
Okay. Another concern is that we're eliminating independent community oversight. It's my understanding that we do have that through IPR and through the Citizens Review Committee. Would you say part of the misunderstanding or confusion around COAB is that they were also supposed to provide oversight, or?
That's accurate.
Okay. So we're not eliminating it, but we are, in effect, taking away additional oversight that was supposed to have been provided by COAB?
So one of the things, the areas of consensus that we reached with the AMAC, PPA, and DOJ during our facilitated discussions was the definition of oversight, to review and make recommendations. That said, I think, you know, from the common understanding of oversight is to oversee something, COAB was never intended to be a monitoring body. And I think that's the rub. And so if the question is, will PSEP be an additional monitor? No, PSEP will not be a monitor.
And just to be clear, in addition to IPR, CRC, during the life of the settlement agreement, you still have the DOJ and you
and
still
COCL.
Have the judge and the COCL. Sorry, I almost forgot the COCL.
So in your opinion, whoever wants to answer this, what should have COAB been doing to satisfy the settlement? And what will PSEP be doing, and how will that be functionally different from what COAB was intended to do, if at all?
So I'll actually start with PSEP. In our conversations during the facilitated meetings and mediation, the focus really was community engagement. And this is in line with the 2015 technical assistance letter from the DOJ, where they address what it meant, what it should have meant, to independently assess the settlement agreement, and also how COAB was to go about doing that. And that letter directs the reader to various paragraphs within the settlement agreement that specifically address community engagement. And so with PSEP, it really is just a focusing that did not occur with the settlement agreement language. We are trying to kind of correct that vagueness by being very clear about what we need from this community engagement board and what the original intentions of the parties were in drafting that language.
Okay.
And just briefly, from the legal perspective, there was one thing that was a deliverable for the COAB, and that was a community engagement plan, and the city needs that community engagement plan and needs PPB to work with the community engagement body to adopt one to be in compliance, and that deliverable never occurred, in perhaps because COAB was really focused more on monitoring type role.
Are PSEP recommendations optional?
No. PSEP will be making recommendations to the mayor, to PPB, to the DOJ.
But is adopting them optional?
Yes.
Okay. And then my final question or concern is just, I'm hearing from a lot of community members that they didn't feel that there was adequate public engagement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing from, I'm sorry, I've forgotten who detailed, it might have been you, Nicole, what our outreach was and what those opportunities were. And if you could just detail that again.
So I'm a carryover from the Hilt administration, and
okay.
myself, along with former policy director Deanna Wesson Mitchell and Judy Prosper, compiled a list of every possible person and organization that we could think of to engage on the issue of community engagement. We hired someone part-time, the mayor's office hired someone part-time to conduct the survey, help us conduct the survey and synthesize information. So we went around meeting with former COAB members, mental health advocates, and there's a spreadsheet that details all of this. I just have to pull it for you all. So I'm happy to provide you with that after this meeting. But we met with, who else? The categories of individuals and groups that I listed earlier over the course of maybe 6 to 8 weeks, if I recall. Perhaps like an hour, hour and a half each, taking copious notes. We had the part-time employee there with us taking notes. We engaged additional staff to help us keep track of this information. And once it was all complete, it was compiled into several documents by the part-time employee. The survey was distributed at various meetings. It was also posted online, as I mentioned. I mean, to be frank, during that time, we just didn't have as much feedback from folks. There was a lot of outreach and not a lot of responses. And so there were people that I engaged who I said, you know, it would be great to speak with you on this issue. Would love to hear your thoughts. You are very active in the Portland community. And we were met with silence on the issue. And so, and that is, I mean, that is simply what happened.
Twinkle fingers or thumbs down, people.
So that is simply what happened. You know, we really did our best to conduct the outreach and make sure, because I don't think anyone can say that this board could be successful without actually engaging Portland on these issues.
How many people responded to the survey?
I'd have to pull that for you, but okay. I can find out.
Did we speak to Kathleen Sadat?
Yes.
Because we have a letter from her.
We've engaged Kathleen heavily, but during that time we did sit down with her.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'd like to, unless there's, are there any questions right at this particular juncture, I'd like to invite the next panel, which is Dr. Bethel and Dr. Haynes, to come up and speak. They've been waiting very patiently, and then I believe the district attorney would like to say a few words, then we'll get into public testimony. I want to correct the record on something I said earlier. I was incorrect. I stated that the police refused to show up at the COAB. That was not correct. That was very imprecise. Former Chief O'Day advised Portland Police Bureau members not to attend the CRC meeting. Two separate issues. So I want to correct the record on that. I apologize.
Does the ask for questions include the audience? Or
I'm sorry? The run of show here is we're going to hear from Dr. Bethel and Dr. Haynes, then the district attorney. Then I will ask my colleagues if they have any further issues right now or want to introduce any amendments. Then we're going right to public testimony. And I appreciate everybody's patience on this important issue. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. And thank you for your patience.
To Honorable Mayor Ted Wheeler and distinguished members of the Portland City Council, I'm the Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes, Jr., chairperson of the Urbana Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. AMAC has led the major effort in police reform in the city of Portland the last 13 years, beginning with the Kendra James shooting case through the James Chassie and the Aaron Campbell case, as well as many others. These men and women were victims of police violence that led to the U.S. Department of Justice investigation of the Portland Police Bureau and subsequently to a lawsuit in the federal court and the settlement agreement that was filed in federal judge Michael Simon court. On December 19, 2013, the City of Portland, the Portland Police Association, the U.S. Department of Justice, and AMAC Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, that was given enhanced amicus status in the case, decided to move forward on the settlement agreement adopted by the council in November of 2012. I remind you that the settlement agreement was created to be a different kind of model from the traditional model of having an administrator selected by the judge to supervise the progress or non-progress of the agreement through the entities of COCO and COAB. All parties can agree that COCO and COAB model had both strengths and weaknesses.
The captioning, I think.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Could we wait just one moment to see if we can get the captioning back?
They're probably taking a break right now. They're switching out. Captioners, are you there? Captioners, are you there?
Captioners are taking a break.
Does somebody need to be talking and counting?
I think so.
1, 2, 3. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I'll start again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9, 10.
I'm sorry, Dr. Haynes.
That's all right. Okay.
So let me just speak that into the microphone so that everybody can hear it. And that was that the captions are important not only for the people who are here, but also for the people who are at home. So we want to make sure that everybody's included. So that's why we're waiting. I think possibly it might be something to do with turning 5 o'clock. Do you have any kind of phone contact with them, Carla?
See if
I
can.
I think they're getting ready to come back.
Is it coming?
It's almost there.
Okay, great.
What's that, Carla?
Captioners, are you ready?
Philip says yes.
I think they are.
We're good.
Okay,
thank
good.
You.
We're back on. Never mind. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, we're good to go.
Okay.
Sorry.
I remind you that the settlement agreement is created to be a different kind of model from the traditional model having an administrative model selected by the judge to supervise the progress or non-progress of the agreement through the entities of COCO and COAB. All parties agreed that COCO and COAB model had both strengths and weaknesses that created inefficiencies in achieving the purposes and goals. Now, following the second appeal by the City of Portland to remove major parts of the settlement agreement and to remove Judge Simon from the case, a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal for mediation was called for and granted. In this mediation process, although focus groups had previously been held in the community to receive a feedback on the community engagement proposal, AMAC, the only grassroots voice with enhanced amicus status, was intentionally left out from having a seat in the mediation table until everything was drafted and then called upon to approve and to make limited recommendations on the revised proposal. In light of the narrative, AMAC still continued to engage and make recommendations. I would not attempt to cover all of them, but a few critical ones of the new ordinance of the settlement agreement and community engagement. First, we want to say that community engagement is an essential component of police reform and settlement agreement, but it is only one of several major components of 21st century community policing. We appreciate the community engagement focus, but in addition to the replacement plan called the Portland Commission on Community Unity Engagement, PSAP, it does negate and dilute the language of important citizen oversight. When you compare the language that is in the settlement agreement and the language in PSAP, there is a dilution of the language, and as the ability in the settlement agreement to have an independent assessment in order to make a recommendation. And AMAC defines this recommendation overview as the ability to review and make recommendations separate and independent from the city. Removing this community oversight part of the agreement helped undermine the building of the trust between the community and the police. After all, there's a difference between IPR and the difference with overview of making recommendations on the settlement agreement. Those are two distinct differences that exist. Secondly, AMAC has serious reservation about a city proposal for PSAP member selection. The smaller board member limit diversity expectation and efficiency when there are excusable absentees. We went through a variety of things with COAB, with sickness, and delay and replacement of members that the board became dysfunctional because there were not enough members for a quorum. Furthermore, the selection should be diversified and larger. The responsibility, we believe, should be with the whole city, with the mayor as the chief administrator of PSAP. Thirdly, AMAC understands the need for limited meetings for efficiency and to prevent burnout that did take place in COAB. But if the board is only having two meetings a month, both closed to the public, and a quarterly public forum, that limits the amount of engagement from the community and participation. One of the two meetings should be open to the public. And fourthly, in reference to the 48-hour rule, it is critically important that we don't go backwards on the 48-hour rule instead of forward. We must push forward to interviewing officers engaged in the use of deadly force against citizens within a 24-hour limit, while legally petitioning judicial clarification of the district attorney legal opinion, as well as seeking legislation for clarification by our state legislatures. One thing to remember in this 48-hour rule, when we first started pushing this some 13 years ago, it took 2 weeks to get an interview from a police officer in the Kendra James suite. 2 weeks. 2 weeks for an interview. Eventually, we went to 72 hours. And from 72 hours, eventually to 48 hours. And so, as you can see, The case was whenever the officer was ready. And let us keep in mind the historical context. One of the reasons why the community pushed this 48-hour rule is because the officers that killed Kendra James met over at the Law Center in Appleby and got their stories together and then went to the DA. And so this is a critical moment to create trust and accountability within our community and the police. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. Commissioner Fish.
You piqued my curiosity on one thing you said at the end on the 48-hour rule, and I just wanted to ask you. We have been told repeatedly that one of the challenges that we face on the 48-hour rule has to do with a constitutional issue and how we balance a constitutional right on the one hand with our right as the employer to do a prompt investigation. And so you said there might be some recourse to the legislature to fix this problem. And my question is, what if it is a constitutional issue, what is it that the legislature could do to facilitate the goal we all share of preserving the right to get a prompt interview?
First of all, I think the strategy of going for a judicial clarification is the most rapid way. But there can be amendments, lobbying, have our lobby group for the city to lobby the legislature for an amendment to put some clarification that would clearly define what is the separating the administrative from the criminal part.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Mayor, and to all the council members. My name is Dr. Chi Allen Bethel. I serve as the president of the Albina Minister Alliance and co-chair of the AMAC. This is not a power play or a test of wills, but it is for the good and the betterment of the fabric of our community. COAB, number one, as I refer to it, did have its issues. But also, we've had a change in those who sit at the table, which means that it has brought us those who have very limited institutional memory as well as institutional history as to what has transpired over the years we have been working with the settlement agreement. For long, the AMAC and the broader community has called for the removal of the 48-hour rule and celebrated its removal in the last Portland Police Association contract, though it came at a high dollar cost of increased salaries and et cetera. To now discover the policy or held interpretation of Serrano that jeopardizes and presents a potential extension of up to 10 times the 48 hours and possibly no report or prosecution. But I am indeed thankful to know that this interpretation is not new to the district attorney's office and to know that the district attorney will prosecute all cases. I urge the council then, though there is still tension about the interpretation of the statute for Oregon, to place the directive in place known as Exhibit B that's proposed by the mayor and not enact Exhibit C, nor wait until an opinion has been given by the judicial authority, but we do want the support that we need that judicial authority for clearance, but we cannot afford to continue to risk not knowing or having certainty when another involved officer shooting occurs that results in death or an in-custody death. We will be playing Russian roulette, if I can use that term, and we will not have anything really in place that will bring us about a way of moving forward. We support officers in the use of force cases to be compelled to provide statements within 24 hours, and further that with proper walls in place between administrative and criminal investigations, proceed in a parallel track and not waiting until one is finished, then starting the next. for the council's approval and wanting to go beyond the settlement agreement ending, it has been my full understanding and hope from the beginning of this that it was not going to end after the five-year period, that it was going to continue and not revert back to business as usual. I did not put all of my time into this thus to this day to have an exercise in futility for 5 years and not see any permanent changes that would move the city farther towards reform and police accountability. Now, as it refers to the new plan, the PSEP, which attempts to create an entity to replace COAB 1, and I refer to COAB 1 because that was the first one, I agreed that there were issues with COAB 1, but not beyond repair. And to this day, it's still out of compliance, the city is, in regards to having a COAB in place and operating. This removes the new plan, the responsibility of the COAB, and focuses on the community engagement piece only. However, it does remove one of the most critical pieces, that is community input with oversight, the right to review and make recommendations and transparency. It is proposed to have a mayoral appointed and control committee of 5 to 9 people. This removes the responsibility from the rest of the council members for any responsibility for its success and accountability. We strongly believe that it should be between 11 and 15 to have a broader and more diverse group of people that will hold meetings publicly at neutral locations, not as proposed 2 times per month behind closed doors. I know with COAB there were a lot of things that happened, maybe driving the reasons to say we need to close the door. Closing the door is not fixing the problem. Fixing the problem is addressing what caused those issues and making sure we don't repeat the same issues again.
Amen.
Precept, if I said that right, the group should be charged with holding regular community forums at neutral locations. I say neutral locations because there are some individuals in our community who are thoroughly traumatized to walk into police facilities, and some have distrust of even walking into city-owned buildings at this time.
Amen.
Not just 2 meetings, but to present information and seek community input and give progress reports on the work being done. It must be said as well that there should be a collaboration with the COCAL to hold forums for review of the reports. We're not letting the COCAL off the hook that he, because it is a he, is to prepare reports and present them. We still need a mechanism included in this that says this will happen. This is lacking, as well as community oversight of the first responsibilities in the original settlement agreement, which now has been taken away from community participation and or involvement. So I urge the council to give due diligence to these areas of concern before rushing to put in place this new plan in the hands of just what we think will address the issues. It is not believed that this will get us to what the community has been crying for the decades: reform and accountability of the Portland Police Department. The Portland Police Department must work with the community, but the Bureau needs help. Because if it is to be maintained that the department and the city knows best and refuses to hear from the community, I submit to you that if that was totally true, DOJ is out of a job and a settlement agreement needed never to ever been signed. But DOJ came in because we had patterns and practices of what was happening, and a settlement agreement was signed. Though the city did not admit any liability, they saw the need that we must do something about what's happening in our Bureau. To this day, I think 2 officers have been indicted. None of them have been prosecuted, but 1. But continuously after continuously, individuals are losing their lives at the hands of officer-involved shootings that are always justified, and no discipline has ever seemed to be given to those persons for what they're doing. I submit